ESPN College Football Podcast, hosted by David Pollack and Reese Davis.
The college football playoff semifinals are up on us. What is there to do about opt-outs? If anything, this is the ESPN College Football Podcast for Tuesday, December 28th. Reese Davis and David Pollack with the Turn the Page Tuesday. I don't think we really have to turn the page, David, because everything is looking forward at this point to the two semifinals, Michigan and Georgia, Alabama and Cincinnati. A couple of compelling matchups, largely because we have some new teams in the mix. With Georgia and Michigan, we have a couple of teams that, in my judgment, are constructed similarly, at least in what they want to do and would like to do. And then you have the giant against the upstart. So you have a little bit of everything in these playoff semifinals coming up.
You know, the thing I like about it is, like Michigan and Georgia, I love that they're both similarly built and we get to see who's tougher. And what does Mike Tyson always say? Like, until you get punched in the mouth, like, we're going to find out whoever gets punched in the mouth and how they react, because similar styles, one is built to stop the other one's style. The other one's built to stop the other one's style. And you know, who's going to blink, which coach is going to blink. And by the way, a lot of demons in that game, right? Like Kirby Smart and Jim Harbaugh, a lot of big game people want big things from their programs for a while from those two guys. And then the other side, I think you got Alabama. Can they continue to play, Reese, like they did backs against the wall? Like, the difference between Georgia and Alabama in the SEC championship game was Alabama was a dog that was backed in the corner that had to fight its way out, like had no other choice. They had to come out swinging with everything they had or else they went home. Georgia was sitting in the middle of the living room, fat and happy, been eating plenty of meals, nothing to worry about, nothing to gain, nothing to lose. Like, it was pretty easy for them. So I'm interested to see how if Alabama continues to bring that fight, and Cincinnati, they're a wild card for me. Are they ready for this? Do they know what they're getting into? Like, is this moment going to be really big, really quick? Because Alabama's going to be, their heart rate's going to be flat because, oh, this is another day that ends in Y. Like, we're used to prime time. We're used to natties. Like, this is normal for us. You know, can Ritter and company be ready for the moment, not push, not make mistakes early that gets them out of the game?
As it pertains to that Cincinnati-Alabama game, a lot has been made of the two cornerbacks for Cincinnati, Kobe Bryant, who won the Thorpe Award as the nation's best defensive back, and Ahmad Sauce Gardner, who many believe is the best defensive back on their team, if not the best cornerback in the country, certainly one of them. He's never given up a touchdown pass. That is important, particularly with the injury to Mechie, and Alabama's going to have to rely on a young receiver in a secondary role. They'll need Jaleel Billingsley to step up and play to his capability. He's had a couple of plays down the stretch, but he hasn't performed this season up to the level of his ability. They'll need him in this game and one of their young receivers to step up. But that only matters, David, if the Alabama offensive line plays as soundly as it did against Georgia in terms of assignment sound. Because, look, they get beat physically sometimes, but one of the big problems in the Auburn game, the LSU game, particularly, and other times, they bust assignments and let guys just run free, you know, at Bryce Young. If they play soundly, then it comes down to the cornerbacks. But if they bust assignments, and Cincinnati was the second in the country in pressure percentage, they can get some pressure on Bryce Young, then it makes the job even easier for those cornerbacks, and I think gives Cincinnati a better chance at pulling the upset.
Yep, and that's – I don't disagree at all. And they got some guys that absolutely can do that for Cincinnati, and the way they run their defense with the three-man front and a lot of speed on the field and a lot of blitzes from different directions, they can be confusing. Not only with that, with a guy like Sanders who gets off the ball as quick as anybody in the country can get to the quarterback. So – I think they can, but the problem is, man, and if you watch Alabama, the problem is, you know, the Georgia game, Georgia got pressure a bunch of times, but it's not the first play you have to play. It's the second play. And that's what Bryce Young has shown you, like his ability to extend plays. But I did a tape on him for the upcoming bowl games. But to me, it's like the Matrix. It's literally everything slows down for him. Mm-hmm. And he's just like, yep, there's a bullet, like, there's a bullet. No, that was really easy. Or like, if you like Spider-Man, I guess better when you know, Peter Parker gets his powers and they start swinging at him, the bully starts swinging at him and he's just like, huh, that was easy. I dodged that. So I think, you know, I just, it's going to be amazing because you have to play the first play and then play the second play. And then Jameson Williams, you know, he's the wild card too. Does Cincinnati feel comfortable enough to play on an island with one of their cornerbacks? Do they change the way they approach the game with Sauce Gardner instead of lining him up in the same spot? Do they let him go challenge Jameson Williams? But I also thought Bill O'Brien did an unbelievable job of moving Jameson Williams around, putting him in the backfield a la Sark, like very Sark-esque, moving him around and throwing the ball basically like a reverse. You know, I mean, it's just so I think Bill O'Brien called his best game by far, I thought, this year in the SEC championship game. So he'll have to continue to be creative and continue to understand protections and not put his quarterback in a bad spot.
And the thing is, you look at some of the numbers, David. When under pressure, Bryce Young is sub 50%, you think, oh, wow, let's get some pressure on him. That'll work. Bryce Young also leads the nation with 16 touchdown passes when under duress. So that second play you're talking about, you get him every now and then, or you force an incompletion every now and then, but he gets you a lot of times when that happens too.
He does. And what you know, what you said with Billingsley is interesting too, Reese, because how did we start this football season with Nick Saban at a podium destroying Billingsley, not unlawfully, rightfully so, like because his effort was crap in practice. He's not a physical guy. Like he doesn't give – okay, there's a lot of guys that walk on the field and give you everything they have every single snap. Billingsley isn't one of those guys that's done that consistently. So Nick was trying to pull that out of him, and now injuries force him into a spotlight and give him an opportunity to kind of – you know, fix his season and make it a successful season, which is kind of cool. Hopefully he takes advantage of it.
You know, there's a real one other guy to mention. I don't know if he's going to play or not. It was a guy, remember Kirk mentioned in the preseason because Kirk called the A-Day game, the spring game, and Ajay Hall, the wide receiver, had a big spring game and a lot of big things were expected of him. He too ran afoul of not doing things the way everybody in the program wanted him to do, and he didn't play much. But this is an opportunity now, potentially, for him. We've seen Ja'Cory Brooks with the touchdown catch against Auburn. We've seen Trayshon Holden make a couple of plays. But will it be a Jai Hall? Will a JoJo Earl be recovered and able to play? Those are questions. There's another number that I noticed, David, on the other side. And I still think, regardless, Bryce Young is a worthy Heisman Trophy winner, but Will Anderson is the best player in college football. And Desmond Ridder, too, has struggled under pressure. His completion percentage is about 44%. His QBR is 8, like 0-8 on a scale of 100. But he can run. And that could help Jerome Ford. That could help their running game. If Desmond Ridder can make a few more plays with his feet the way he did earlier in his career and something he hasn't done as much the last year or so.
Oh, Ridder will have to get over 70 yards rushing if they're going to win the game. And this has to be very Clemson, Alabama. God, I think it was 16 where they got to get a bunch of snaps. They got to get a bunch of snaps. They got to try to wear Alabama out. Ridder's got to scramble for a first down. Do the Deshaun Watson get hit and spin like a helicopter? he's going to literally have to play great. Here's the problem with Ridder. Ridder rides a roller coaster. Like sometimes you watch that dude and you're like, first pick, first round pick, no doubt. Like I see that dude as a first round draft pick. And then sometimes you watch him and you're like, oh, what? The conference championship game against Houston, the first possession of the second half, Reese, I mean, you can't dial up a better play. His receiver's open by 15 yards and he completely misses him. Like, so I think he can't have the inconsistencies and the ups and downs that he's had throughout his career. He's going to have to come out and play a great game, start to finish, take shots, like getting hit physically, running the football. He's going to have to play a great game for four quarters.
Alabama's got two new corners in this game too. Josh Shobe is presumably out with an injury. I think there's also an expectation or a fear that Jalen Armour-Davis won't be able to play at the other corner, which would leave them with Kool-Aid McKinstry, the freshman who people around the program will tell you is probably the most talented guy they have, but he is a freshman. And the other is Jackson. You know, maybe they mix and match and move Brian Branch in there if they need to. You know, I mean, there are a lot of things they could do, but you've got some corners in unfamiliar positions.
And by the way, I think Alec Pierce is an absolute stud.
Yeah.
I think he's a stud. I think if he played in a different offense, that dude would put up video game type numbers. He's an athletic freak. He's big. He's tall. He has a 40-inch vertical. This kid is good. Number 12 for Cincinnati. He's a wide receiver. I'm telling you, inexperienced corners throw jump balls. You know, Alabama's going to play some man coverage. They're going to play a lot of cover three. Throw the ball up and let my guy go up and get it. And he will do it consistently. So he's a guy in the game to look out for.
There are a lot of highlight reel contested ball catches, particularly in the end zone over the course of Alec Pierce's career. And I agree with you. I think that's when you get the opportunity, let him make a play for you because he's really, really strong. Let's go to the Orange Bowl, Michigan and Georgia. I was going through some old video, David, of the last meeting between Michigan and Georgia. And I'm going to show a little bit of this on College Game Day, New Year's Eve morning. 1965 game, you know, Vince Dooley coached.
How old were you?
I was unborn.
Oh, yeah. Not ungood, unborn.
Yeah, unborn. Not yet. Born later that year, but not at the time. So not alive. Going through some tape and you're watching and Coach Dooley, this was even before the Herschel I formation, they're running like a tight slot T. You know, I actually called Coach Dooley about some of the strategy and about one play that I'm about to tell you about. This is going to be an old school game between Michigan and Georgia, but it will not be as old school as the 1965 game. I'm going to ask you if you've ever seen this. Michigan punts. They knock the punt out of bounds on about the 1 or 2 yard line, right? So on first down, Georgia running play gets nothing. Second play, they line up in a shotgun, snap the ball to the quarterback, who at this time, it was a backup quarterback in the game, a man called Kirby Moore. Kirby, oddly enough. He takes a couple of steps and then kicks his leg into the air like a rocket, as if faking a quick kick, and then completes a pass out of the end zone. And they end up getting a first down. So I asked Coach Dooley, I said, "Do you call a fake quick kick?" And he didn't remember anything about it. And he said, maybe he thought it was another quarterback, Preston Ridehouse, I think. I can't remember his last name. Thought maybe it was a different quarterback. He said he was known to improvise. So Coach Dooley said, "Send me that clip." So I sent it to him. He said, "I have no recollection of this play." He calls Kirby Moore, the guy who faked the kick and then threw the pass. He has no recollection of the play. They were faking quick kicks on second down. Georgia punted on third down or tried to punt and had a miscue, confused the official, stopped the game for about 5 minutes because in the Big Ten, no one was used to seeing people punt on third down in the old General Nealon style that many teams in the South incorporated back then. So Georgia got another shot. But it was great to walk down memory lane and know these two old school teams are playing. And there was a play, a key part of the game that Georgia ended up getting a first down and getting out of trouble and eventually winning the game, that was built around a fake quick kick that nobody remembers.
That's why you're the best at what you do, because you look up stuff like that. That would absolutely bore the mess out of me, but I'm glad you do it.
I thought there was
going to be anybody, some. How does nobody remember this? Like, I remember... I remember every play, like, of everything.
That's the point, is that I thought when I called Coach Dooley, he was going to go, "Oh, we saw this alignment. We knew if we had quick kicked, you know, in a game earlier in the season against somebody, and we knew they'd react." It was like, "No, I don't remember that." Coach remembers like vividly details from that game, but for whatever reason, that particular snap, neither he nor the quarterback / fake quick kicker in question and remember a thing about it. It's clear as day. I'll show it Saturday morning. He takes a couple steps and then, you know, like kicks his leg into the air and pulls it.
Apparently that's not a good strategy if they don't quick kick in the Big Ten. You just set yourself up to get destroyed, but it worked, I guess. So whatever.
No, they were ready. It got a receiver open, or at least he got open. I don't know. But anyway, I don't think you'll see fake quick kicks, but I do think you'll see a lot of old school. The question to me in this game, David, is not whether Michigan can play the game into Georgia secondary as Alabama did, but whether it will have to. And if that's the first question, if it has to, can they? And will Georgia be able to force Michigan to play this game in their secondary, meaning put it on Cade McNamara?
Now, you know, the interesting part about that is So you go back and you watch, like, you know, we got a lot of time over the holidays. So you go back and you watch, like, styles make fights, right? Like, who, I was curious, who tried to do this to Georgia? Like, who's tried to get in two tight end sets? And the answer is nobody. Nobody's wanted to line up and pound Georgia. So honestly, I know they're big. I know they're physical. I know how great they are, but I also haven't seen anybody try to repeatedly smash them in the mouth like Michigan is going to do. So that's curious to me. I don't think they can. I don't think you can line up. I just don't think you can run it. Jordan Davis and Jalen Carter and Devontae Wyatt and Trayvon Walker. Like, I think they're too big and too physical. Now listen, I also think Gattis does a really good job of mixing in the RPOs with two tight end sets and mixing in jet sweeps and double passes and flea flickers. Like, they do a really good job of keeping you off balance. But McNamara showed more to me in the Iowa game. It's like they were like, all right, listen, we got to continue to open this thing up. And he threw more seam shots, and I think he's going to have to. So I don't think Michigan will be able to pound Georgia. But I do think they'll keep it. It won't be like Ohio State pound. But it will be – I do think they'll have success running the football with their 1-2 punch for 3 yards, not for 0 yards. You know, like – but they're not – I don't think it's going to be – 6 or 7 yards a carry, and they're going to continue to do it to shorten the game and have success and create some play action. But it's going to be solely on Cade McNamara, whether he can make plays in the passing game against the weakness of Georgia's defense.
And then on the other side, a quick question, because of your great knowledge of Athens area high school football, what's the mascot for Cedar Shoals?
Oh, I should know that. It's literally right down the road.
Well, anyway, while you scan your memory bank, you know, 12 years ago, I think you probably know this, 12 years ago, Mike McDonald was a running back linebacker for Cedar Shoals High School there in the greater Athens area. And now he's trying to knock his alma mater out of the playoffs as a defensive coordinator at Michigan. David, I spent some time at the Heisman weekend with Mike McDonald. Sometimes you meet a dude and you go, that's going to be a head coach. He's going to be a head coach. Really impressive dude and what he's done. I think we talked a little bit about him, but there's also the personal side. I think we talked about him a couple weeks ago. The personal side of him going against Georgia, starting his coaching career, you know, basically volunteering at Cedar Shoals back in the day, and now a rising star and going against Georgia on this stage. And trying to see if they can, you know, we talked about the one side, see if they can disrupt, if they can force Georgia to try to win the game by throwing it, and whether that then unleashes Hutchinson and Ojabo to have an even greater impact on the game.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, going into the Alabama game, I thought the Georgia offense would struggle a little bit because versus two tight end sets, Alabama is one of the best in the country at defending. That they're really good. That's more their wheelhouse than it is spread, motion, shifts all over the place kind of deal. Michigan's not great in that aspect. They struggled mightily versus Michigan State to the point where there's like 10 yards a play, Reese, like big time. When they're better at the defensive end spots than they are defensive tackling on the interior. Mm-hmm. So can they stop the run? If they're getting passing situations, Ajabo and Hutchinson's are going to win. They're absolutely
right.
They're going to destroy Georgia's tackles. But you know, the Bowers problem is an issue. Like, how do you defend him? How do you want to defend him? Like, who do you put on the field? And I can tell you this too, from watching Michigan secondary, the thing that I would attack is the slot. I think the slot corners are areas where they're going to play a lot of man. And I don't think, like, I watched the Iowa game, Reese, and I saw open guy after open guy after open guy that Iowa wasn't good enough to capitalize on because of their lack of passing game. If that guy is Bowers, mm-hmm. I'm going to feed him the rock. So, can Michigan put it – if Michigan can get it to that point where they can say, we're going to stop – we stop the run, we have success. Listen, George Pickens is a big X factor, man. Like, this dude, he hadn't played all year. Got 21 snaps, I think, in the SEC championship game. His snap count's probably going to be higher in this game. If they get another game, it'll probably be higher again as he continues to get more healthy. And listen – I don't think he's moving like George Pickens did as a freshman or as a sophomore, but I know one thing, he's still 6'4", and he'll still catch the rock if you throw him jump balls. So, that's what's fun is both sides is Can they impose their styles? And can Georgia stop the run and make it Cade McNamara's hand? Can Michigan stop the run and put it in Stetson Bennett's hand? So that's a great question. But Cedar Shoals, I just Googled it. Cedar Shoals Jaguars, by the way.
There you go. The former Jag. Let's do one more thing on this, and then let's hit a couple of other topics. JT Daniels, COVID protocol. You and I have both been of similar opinion that Stetson Bennett should be the quarterback anyway. What impact does it have on how long they will ride with Stetson? If things should not go well, the fact that JT's been out, did that change anything, or is that just a perception of change? You're close to the program. You've been around.
So. If we didn't see Stetson Bennett after his second pick in the SEC championship game, I just don't foresee a situation where you're going to see him. Or if you didn't see JT Daniels, excuse me. Like, he was struggling through his second pick, could have had another one to battle, who could have housed the first one. Like, he was struggling and wasn't playing great, and you continued to ride. And listen, JT Daniels has also been in and out of the practices for weeks and weeks and weeks and months now. Like, he's hadn't practiced for a week's stretch, and then he'll practice for a little bit and then be out. So, you know, as much as you want to point to this, that, and the other, the continuity and the reps have all been consistent. It's been one guy, Stetson Bennett, who's been there the whole season, repping, while the other one's been in and out of the lineup, back and forth.
And you also have the elusiveness of Stetson Bennett, which might come into play against those pass rushers. David, New Year's Six Bowls, let's just hit on a couple quickly. Rose Bowl, Ohio State fans, and I know that, you know, there's resurgence and positive tests and so forth with the virus that could impact this. But Ohio State fans return tickets to the Rose Bowl. You have four starters who decide that they're not going to play in the Rose Bowl. For a number of years, I've thought that the playoff and the Rose Bowl were immune to any large-scale opt-outs, meaning that, look, you might always have someone who's going to opt out of the Rose Bowl, and maybe someday we'll even have someone opt out of a playoff. I can't conceive of that, but maybe they would. But to have four starters sort of really solidifies to me that in order, if you determine that the bowl structure and the bowl system and these traditional bowls are worth saving for the enterprise, if they are worth continuing to attach meaning to, then you have to expand the playoff and incorporate those games in it every time, or else it's something that I don't think can be attained given the current climate. I've heard all kinds of things, and they're all centered around, you know, people say NIL deals or the bowls pay them, or, you know, tie the contract. If you don't play in the bowl, you don't get your NIL money. All those things are designed around forcing people to do something. That is not going to work. The only thing that is going to work is to make it attractive and make them want to play in those games. How do you do that? Probably by attaching significance to the game within the structure of a playoff. I'm not sure that there's enough money to make it as attractive as risking an NFL contract. You know, I mean, it's probably a good idea for the bowls to give some type of appearance fee to the players who are there. Maybe redistribute the money in a different way instead of, you know, just big glob going to wherever. Maybe a certain section of it is set aside, like playoff money. Like playoff money is in the NFL. Maybe you do that. Maybe that encourages some. But the number one thing you have to do is make it so that people want to play in the game. And then you probably have to attach significance through the playoff to the game. And to do that, you're going to have to expand to at least 12, I think. That I've finally come around on that because of this.
Well, and I think 12 keeps so many people in the season throughout the season where you won't have opt-outs as much. And you'll have so many people still fighting for those spots. And then you're right. Then those games become games that matter. And as much as we want to attach significance to certain bowl games and stuff, that doesn't matter what we think. Like, it matters what these kids are, you know, wanting to do and wanting to play. You know, listen, I think a large part of this too, you know, I've been on a rant on social media. I'm sure you've seen it with the youth league sports, and it's kind of driving me nuts but I think a lot of these kids, and I can speak to it with certainty about what I saw. These kids at 8, 9, 10, 11. They're playing nowadays, they're playing 7-on-7, you know, in the off season, and they're conditioning in the off season, and they play football, and then they play postseason football where they're playing national championships that go into January. And listen, we're ruining youth league sports. We're ruining everybody's getting burnt out. And here's the thing. You got so many hits in your body. You got so many shots in your body. Like, you got so many things that there will come a point when you're just done. And I think a lot of these kids have been Reese, I'm just telling you, kids that were way more talented than I were at Georgia, they were done being yelled at, and they were done working, and they were done being driven. Like, they were just so tired and worn out from being beat down since they were 7 years old by youth league sports and youth league coaches. And so I think this goes into it too. I think that's a part of it. Football's 365 now. Like, it's year round. There's so much that goes into it that you don't really get a break a lot of times. And I think I can tell you too, I love football with everything in me. And I was one of those kids that actually enjoyed it. I was burnt out by the end of the year too. And I was worn out and worn down. And then you go home with your family, you're like, oh wow, like, you got, this is cool. Like, you actually get to spend time with family and not have to do things. And so I think we got a bigger problem on our hands with youth league sports and getting that where we're not playing two or three sports at a time and playing year round, and like, bring some love back to this, like, love and passion back to the game. And I think it's going to have to start at those lower levels of people providing opportunities that are great opportunities and not that are making it a job at 8 years old, 9 years old, and 10 years old. It's just crazy, man.
You're right. There's always the balance. And I'm always interested to hear when because I've been through it. I'm on the other side of it, you know, as a parent with all of this, from where you are with Nicholas and Leah. But I'm always interested whenever I hear people be upset about this, the juxtaposition with the successful player who occasionally will thank a parent for driving them. But that is sort of if you can lock into what the personality of the individual kid is. Some kids do respond to that. But the overwhelming majority, like you say, you know, it becomes something they feel like they are expected to do. And it is not something that they are really, I won't say they're not enjoying it, because I think football players like to play football. But that level of joy that you're talking about of just doing it because they want to do it. And when you look at it like it's a step in your toward a goal, it is not about, you know, a last ride with your teammates. It's not about collecting the bowl watch or the experience or hanging out with the guys or whatever. It's about, how do I get to the next step? And everything has become centered around, how do I get the youth league player to be the best player on the freshman team? How do I get the freshman team to start as a sophomore in high school? How does he start to get recruited? You know, and it's all about that instead of being in the moment and cherishing and enjoying and loving where you are. Ambition is a good thing. I don't want that to be misunderstood. Ambition and drive and goals, those are all good things.
Great things.
But everything needs balance and measure and some reason to it to make sure
that it's our job to provide that. Yes. It's our job as parents and coaches. Like, it's okay for your kids to read. It's okay for your kids to play video games. It's okay to play board games. It's okay to like do nothing sometimes. And that's going to be like the thing I see now, Reese, that drives me nuts is like, now baseball players think they need to practice every Sunday. So even during football season, they go throw every Sunday and they need to do X, Y, and hit. And I got to keep my skills sharp. Newsflash, parents, if your kid's good enough, in the end, he's going to be good enough. And it ain't got nothing to do with you driving your kid and making them go take cut. Your kid will decide whether they are successful because of what they want to put into it, not you. You're more likely to create burnout than you are a Hall of Famer. Let them be kids. Listen, every time they ask you to go play, Reese, every time my kids ask me to go play, I'm going to say yes, 100%. But I'm not going to make them go out in the gym and dribble. I'm not going to make them go out there. You need to do these drills. You need to do that. Like, I'm taking the joy away from the game. Like, the game has to be fun. It has to be something that they love. I was one of those guys that I don't think I was as talented as everybody else. But when I got to Georgia, I freaking loved it. I loved the grind. I loved to work. My parents never got me a personal trainer. My parents never put me in camp. They didn't put me in Camps Palooza. They just let me be a kid. They let me go play in the yard. And that's the problem. Kids don't go play anymore. So parents think, they got to put them in X. They got to put them in Y, and they got to make them do this to make them successful. In all actuality, I just think if you let kids be kids, they'll figure it out. And whether they want to do it or not is going to determine whether they're successful.
I do agree with you, and I don't want this to be taken as a disagreement. But I do think that sometimes we paint with this broad brush that all of the parents, particularly the dads, are trying to create Hall of Famers or make stars. Sometimes what they're doing is trying to give them an opportunity that they didn't have because they think that the kid wants that. And sometimes the kid does want that. But the thing that happens with kids is what they want fluctuates. And when my son was growing up, here was the rule. He wanted to take individual hitting lessons. And I was great with that. He had a great teacher when he was young, a guy who was just tremendous and had a good balance and good reason to him. But here was the rule. If I'm paying for the lesson, you can't just go to the lesson, but you can stop the lessons anytime you want. All you have to do is say, I'm tired of it. I'm bored. I'm burnt out. I want to do something else. That's fine. But if we're paying for the lessons, then you got to do the work that's assigned by that trainer in between. And it was, and in this case, the hitting coach that we had is a guy called Ryan Redmanovich, who played in the big leagues. He actually works for us at ESPN now, and he's phenomenal. But he was great in that he didn't give it the, you got to do this an hour a day. He was like, hey, tape some pennies to a string in your room. And when you're sitting around reading or whatever, he goes, focus on each penny, you know, as you go down the string to kind of train your eyes, things like that. Throw up some bottle caps in the backyard, hit some bottle caps with a broomstick. You know, stuff like that. It was like became a game and fun. And it wasn't like, oh, I've got to go put in this hour. But that sometimes I think that parents, and I probably was in this category. And, you know, I don't think I did the thing trying to, you know, create something else, trying to, you know, create a superstar, but he wanted to do it. And as long as I paid for it and he wanted to do it, all I expected was then put some effort in it. And it wasn't just like a glorified play date. That was all. So I don't think that all the parents are just trying to create Hall of Famers. I think they're just, sometimes they're trying to give opportunities. What they need to do is make sure that they're watching the signs and make sure that their kid doesn't look at this as drudgery, because that does extinguish the love and the love for the game.
And I tell you what, the best thing I ever did with my kids is I sat them down and I just said, what's your goals? Like, what do you want? What do you want to go create goals? I was like, listen, I can help you with blueprints for things. I can lead you. But like, we sat down. I was like, Napster, what, Nicholas, what's your spiritual goals? What's your school goals? What's your sports goals? And we literally made a list of things that he wanted to accomplish. And he wrote down for basketball, I want to become a better shooter. He was like, I'm going to shoot 200 shots a day, every day. And I go, buddy, you don't have to shoot 200 shots a day, every day. Like, that's not going to make you a great shooter. I said, if you do that 3 days a week, like, that's more than enough. Again, we have to provide balance and structure. Mm-hmm. We can't, if you go 1,000, yes, my kid's super driven. He is. He's super driven now to be great. And I can feed him and feed him and feed him and feed him and feed him. He's also going to get to that point where it's too much too soon. Or and listen, I know you think you're doing what's best for the kid, but if we think big picture, so many parents, I'm around so many parents now with basketball, like, their eighth graders not playing on the eighth grade team. Well, they should just quit. What do we mean? Like, what does that mean? Like, Nicholas is a seventh grader. Like, a lot of people will be like, hey, don't you think he should play more? Don't care. I'm not in this for seventh grade basketball. Like, that's not what I'm in. I want Nicholas to be busy. And Nicholas plays baseball, basketball, and football all the time. People are like, why don't you just pick two? Why don't you pick two? If he has fun with all three and he gets a break from one, to the next, and it keeps him out of trouble, Reese. Keeps him out of trouble, keeps him entertained. Like, I don't care if he's worse at all those. Because guess what? When he gets to be 16, 17 years old, if he wants to focus on one sport and go make his dreams come true, so be it. let's not look at college. Like, let's not look at NFL. Let's look at right now creating fun and creating an environment that's positive for your kid to go and have fun in high school and have positive memories in high school with whatever sport they want to, however many sports they want to pursue.
Yeah. My dad made me choose to, but it wasn't because of that. It was because you're not getting enough done around here, boy, with the chores.
So, and that's stuff. Hey, and that
you're going too much.
Pick that two. Used to exist and be real. And now we don't have as much of that, obviously, because for some reason, kids aren't supposed to do chores and they aren't required to do things. And they just, because Reese, they're so busy, but we weren't busy back in the day. We weren't busy to do this, but that's okay.
Yeah, we didn't. I haven't seen many kids that were assigned for the summer. Hey, I need a sidewalk from the driveway to the front door. How about you dig that ditch out there?
Hey, and I bet you when your dad asked you to dig that ditch, you went, yes, sir. Nowadays, if I said that to my son, he'd be like, why are we digging a ditch?
Exactly.
You were probably like, hey, dad, how big do you want that, sir? How wide do you want it? I'll make sure I measure it. Now they're like, wait a minute. Why are we digging a ditch?
Yeah,
like,
I'm not going to say I was real happy about doing it, but you know, it had to be done. There was no negotiation on that. Okay. Well, we need to wrap up. Give me one thing. Give me one other thing. Some other New Year's Six game. We've talked Rose Bowl a little bit. You hit me with this first, and then another. Do you favor Utah in the game now, or did you before?
I might have before too, because what Michigan did to Ohio State.
Yeah.
Utah is capable of doing the same thing. I love the way they're playing. I love how hot they are. And I think defensively, if you haven't watched them, you're be surprised. And now without those weapons, I would favor Utah.
Okay. Is your guy going to score a million points against Baylor, or will Aranda shut him down? Those two guys know each other a little bit, I'd say.
Yeah. Who's Baylor playing again?
Ole Miss.
My guy. I think they'll score. I think they'll score a ton. And listen, that Chapin kid looked good in the championship game, but he also looked really good early and didn't look as good late. So I think Ole Miss is going to win that game.
All right. Hey, looking forward to getting to the Orange Bowl. Michigan and Georgia is going to be great. College game day. Remember,
hey, you need to come up with a bet for me and Dez. Like, we have to have a bet. Like, we've never had this on set where a team's playing against another team in the playoffs. Like, this has to happen. I mean, well, with me and Dez, me and you've never put a bet on it though either. So,
well, I didn't play, so it makes it different.
That's not true. You walked on as a basketball player at Alabama. I bet you.
Yeah, but I got cut.
I bet y'all didn't know that at home.
I got cut in like 45 minutes. So I mean,
doesn't matter. Stop ruining my story, okay? Anyway. Next time I tell this, I'm going to say you dropped 17 in the tryouts. Okay.
You know, I told you that's what I told one of my high school teammates. I said, man, we've been out so long, you should be averaging double figures by now. I was like, who's going to know the difference? Just tell them. Okay. You got 10 a game. In five more years, you'll be up to 16, 17 a game.
100%.
All right, brother. It was fun. We'll talk in the greater Miami area. And then, you know what? We need to document the trip to the Rose Bowl too. Not in a way that's obnoxious because, hey, we get to do all this cool stuff. But I'm very grateful for the opportunity that we're going to have to do the Orange Bowl and then go overnight and be there for the Rose Bowl show the next morning. And I'd like to share that with people, but hopefully not in a, you know, not in an obnoxious, hey, look at us kind of way. You know, hopefully we can, your social media may even work on that. Figure out a way for us to do that.
I'm social media not savvy. I know how to do Twitter. That's about it.
All right, man.
All right, brother. See y'all.